Welcome back to SermonSmith. SermonSmith is a podcast of conversations with church leaders about the craft of sermon preparation. And I'm excited to move into episode number 3 today, but before we get into that interview, I wanted to do a little bit of housekeeping, talk through a few things going on. I've really been pleased with the feedback we've gotten. As someone said in a comment I received, it's really scratched an itch, and I'm finding a lot of people are interested in having these conversations, which thrills me because I've always enjoyed having these conversations, and so I'm glad that others want to be part of them too, or at least listen into them. So thanks for that, and thanks for all of you who have spread the word. And I want to let you know a couple things about how you can continue to do that. Many of you are all already following on Twitter at SermonSmith. We also have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/SermonSmithCom. Wasn't able to get facebook.com/SermonSmith, so we went with SermonSmithCom, all one word. You can also find the podcast in iTunes, depending on how you might have found this. And one of the things that's really helpful, for those of you who have been giving good feedback, or anytime I get a comment on Twitter, I always say, hey, please go to iTunes and review the show there. I know from other friends who have done podcasts that that can be really helpful for getting the podcast featured for others to find it and just getting it featured or getting it noticed in general. So if you've enjoyed it and think it's been valuable, I'd really appreciate it if you could leave some kind of brief review on iTunes. That'd be fantastic. One other thing I want to let everybody know about, in case you haven't even been there, because maybe you found the podcast through other means, but we do have a website at sermonsmith.com, and a few things are going on the website. As the guests that we've had on the podcast talk about the books that they appreciate or the gear that they use, you know, whether it's hardware or software or even Moleskinas, that kind of thing. I've been connecting each interview to the tools that they use. And so we're building a small little database of sermon resources and apps and that kind of thing that people are using. So that as this show continues with more and more interviews, you'll be able to go on and say, you know, I'm interested in using, say, Evernote for my own sermon preparation. And you'll be able to see all of the different people who have used it. Or if you want to see sample resources or books, that's all there. Most of those are linked as affiliate links. I'll just say that in disclosure, probably not a surprise, but that also helps us pay for some of the bandwidth for the show and the time I'm putting into it. So if you're interested in that, love it. If you could go in and see what everybody's doing, what we've been keeping track of that people have been commenting on. But anything you purchase through there is also appreciated because it helps me feed my kids. So excited to get into number 3. This interview went really, really well. The interview for number 3 is a guy named Mike Goldsworthy. And Mike is the lead pastor of Parkcrest Christian Church in Long Beach, California. So he's really got it rough out there. But let's jump right into it. You know what? No, I do want to say one other thing, which is I will have a few comments at the end that I hope you'll stay for related to Mike's interview. After we were done, he had thought of something else that he emailed me that I think will actually be a really helpful resource, but I'll tack that on at the end to explain it so you have it in the context of our conversation. So here we go with Mike Goldsworthy. We've never met in person, but with me today is Mike Goldsworthy. Right? It is plural gold. You're worth many gold?
Many golds. Goldsworthy, yeah.
Goldsworthy, not Goldworthy. Goldsworthy.
Yeah, there
what's,
you go.
What's the, do you have any idea what the origin of that name is?
I forget it. I'm a European mutt, so right, it's well, somewhere over there.
This is, you know, this is audio only, but I will confirm that you look like a European mutt. So, well, Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit? I'll give a backstory about why I reached out to you. Mike and I, like I said, have never met in person. We have many mutual friends, and I even have known his wife since she was a seventh grader. But I reached out to Mike because we've just exchanged a lot of emails and blog comments and tweets about nerdy stuff, and I knew that we share a passion for nerdy workflows and preaching. So I thought he'd be a fun one to have on.
Yeah, you actually, just about every blog post you make forces me to spend more money, which is a problem.
It's a good thing I haven't been blogging as much lately then.
Yeah, it's helpful for me.
Yeah. So do I get in trouble with your wife because of that?
You do, actually. I blame it on you.
Oh, well, thanks. I'm glad I could be your crutch. Well, Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you are, what your role is, you know, your church context, what your role is there, and so we can get an idea of where it is that you do the preaching that you do.
Yeah. So I lead a church in Long Beach, California called Parkcrest Christian Church. And it's a multi-site church, multi-venue church. And I've been there for 13 years, started as a high school pastor, then began leading 20-somethings ministry, then came the teaching pastor, and eventually 5 years ago, I took over as the senior pastor after retired after 30 years, and I took over for him.
Is he still around at all?
He's still around, still attends the church.
Wow.
He retains the title of pastor at the church and preaches once in a while.
Gotcha. Well, that's great.
No, it's been good.
How often then in that role do you preach?
I preach about 30 to 35 weekends a year.
And then you have a team of people on staff who preach other times?
Yeah, for the most part. We'll bring in one or two people a year, but for the most part, it's staff preaching.
Yeah, yeah. So you said that you are a multi-site, multi-venue. Do you do video to other places, or do you have live preachers at each?
We have live preachers off-site, and then on-site we have video venues.
Oh, okay. So I'm curious, then, for video venues on-site, well, I'll tell you this question. We'll come back to it.
Yeah.
I want to get into the prep stuff, but I'm curious if you find that knowing some of the stuff will be on a screen for some people, if that even changes how you have to prepare it all. So
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah,
well,
totally.
That's a teaser then. We'll go back to that. but yeah, let's walk through, you know, we have a fairly typical flow of conversation we walk through here. Tell us about what the process looks like as you map out, I pulled down your podcast and listened to a couple to get a feel. It doesn't look like you work through lectionary necessarily. It looks like you work through series. So tell us a little bit about what the process looks like of mapping out your series, how you choose what you're going to preach through, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So for the most part, it's almost all team based. And I will usually in October, I'll get our staff together and we will, with the whole staff, we'll review last year's sermon series. So I'll give them a recap of all the series, and then I'll have them all essentially vote on, hey, these were the three most impactful for our church, giving us reasons why. And then we'll start to get some ideas of what resonated, what didn't resonate. Then we'll ask them three or four questions. It'll say, we'll ask them, what's going on in the community right now that you feel like needs to be addressed? What, if you could say anything to our church right now, what would you say? We'll ask some questions like that to get a pulse. Expecting hopefully our staff has a good idea of the pulse of our church and the pulse of our community, and that starts to collate some ideas. So then I will go away into the mountains with a team of about 5 to 8, and we will spend several days brainstorming and putting together sermon series for a year. So in October, we will have a rough outline of what we will do for the entire January to December of the next year.
Wow. Okay. So what kind of reflection do you get back from people as you evaluate, you know, the prior year? Like what have been some things that have been said that was, this is why this one was really good?
Yeah. So it's interesting. It's all anecdotal, of course.
Sure.
So it's, hey, so-and-so in my small group was really struggling with this, and when we talked through that, I saw them take significant steps of faith. Or it was really impactful when we did a series a couple of years ago, and we did these sort of a free wedding weekend where we had all these couples who had been living together, who money was a barrier for them to get married. We did this kind of mass wedding thing for them, and the church really rallied around. It was really powerful. So anyway, so stuff like that comes up where people say it was so powerful to watch the church rally around that thing. And so it'll be things like that. It'll be, hey, at my school, my kid's school, people are going through whatever, X, Y, Z. These are what I'm hearing parents talk about at PTA meetings. These are that sort of thing.
Okay. Do you tend to mostly do thematic or topical series? Do you do textual series?
We do both.
Yeah.
When we do a textual series, we make it feel a little more topical, though. So we just went through the Psalms.
That's what I listened to, yeah.
Okay, so we didn't go straight through the Psalms. We picked out of like 5 categories of Psalms, we picked out one Psalm that represented each of those categories. But we framed it as, we called it Rehearsing Life. And we framed it through sort of the lens of the idea of praying the Psalms, and that Psalms are things that have been sung and read and prayed throughout history that go through every human emotion, things like that, and that as you go through those, you might not be in a time of lament, but if you are praying the Psalms, you're going to pray lament, And what you're doing is you're rehearsing how you're going to respond when you're in a time of lament. So squeeze that as that became like sort of a theme for a series based around some psalms.
So most of the time, even when you do work through a text, if you're going to work through Colossians, you might try to really wrap it around the particular theme of Colossians just to hold it together for people.
Yeah, totally. We did that maybe a year or so ago. We went through Sermon on the Mount and we called it A New Way to Be Human.
Yeah, yeah.
And walked through it out of that lens.
Okay. So you map out a year at a time, and I assume somewhere close to that time frame, you're also mapping out when you're going to be preaching and when others are going to be preaching.
Yeah, you would think it would be that organized. So some of it, you know, based off of vacation schedules and stuff like that. Sometimes as we're doing stuff like that, so we will have another step before that where I'll sit down and I'll actually write a synopsis for each series where I'll sit down a few months ahead of time and I'll write down, here's the objectives for that series. Here's a weekly sort of big idea for this weekend. Here's what we want to hit. Here's the main passages of scripture, that sort of thing. And when we start doing that, a lot of times I'll resonate more or less with certain messages that'll be like, I want to make sure I'm the one giving this to the church, or hey, this person would be really great at giving this message. And so it ends up a few months ahead of time is more of when we have who's speaking when.
Yeah. I'll just make a comment right now. Can you send me a sample of one of those I can post for people to take a look at?
Yeah.
Along with this?
Just yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I'll make a note to email you about that. You have a good idea in the next, any given time, you have a good idea in the next 3 to 4 months of what you're going to be preaching on. And so why don't you walk us through your timeline of when you start working, just, pick any particular recent sermon or one, that's coming up and work through a timeline of what it looks like for you to start the process and enter into it for a sermon.
Yeah. So I use Evernote a ton on PC, on the Mac, and on my iPhone. And what I'll do is I will dump into Evernote. I'll create one file or one note. I think it's obviously called in there. That's for a particular series. And with that note, I will probably about 3 or 4 months ahead of time, I'll drop the synopsis of the series in there. And I'll just start making notes in it here and there that things will come up, ideas, whatever. And I'll just start putting stuff in there. Then I will break out each of the sermons that are in that series that I'm going to preach. And I'll make a separate note for each of those. Mm-hmm. And I'll probably do that 4 to 6 weeks before I'm preaching. And with each of those, I'll start at sometimes just random times dropping stuff in there. Sometimes I'll sit down and be like, I need to spend the next 30, 45 minutes thinking about this particular sermon. And I'll just start dropping in more and more ideas. Then about 2 weeks out before preaching, I'm trying to spend more concentrated time with the particular sermon that is 2 weeks out, putting together, starting to coalesce ideas, maybe doing a little more study. Maybe I had something. I was like, oh, this is an interesting word. I need to spend more time studying that word. Or here's an interesting illustration. I need to look into that more, whatever it is. I'll spend a bit more concentrated time looking into that. And then on Monday of the week that I'm preaching, we have a team that gets together and we review the previous weekend sermon. So whoever preached, we kind of pick it apart a little bit. We'll talk about transitions. We'll talk about, hey, why did you use this word here and not there? Why didn't you? It would have been really stronger if you'd repeated this phrase a few times. And we'll pick it apart and then we'll spend about half an hour talking about the upcoming sermon. And so I'll just kind of dump on them. Here's what I'm doing. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's the direction I'm headed. And it's kind of a free for all. So sometimes people have illustrations. They'll have ideas. They'll be like, hey, I don't think that's a super strong idea, or you've used that idea a lot lately. What if you took it in this kind of direction? And we'll just kind of talk it through. And I'm just scribbling down notes that whole time. And then that week I'm putting together an outline and doing the actual writing. Usually on Thursday, I block out the whole day and spend that day finishing up that weekend's message.
So let's talk about Monday. We'll come back to Thursday. So you're coming in Monday with this Evernote file just of ideas. You're sitting at your kid's soccer game, an idea comes up. You pull out your iPhone, you tap into Evernote and save it or whatever. You're sitting at there on Monday then and starting to share this, who all is, I mean, is this meeting the people who regularly teach within your church setting, or who's part of that? Some random staff people?
Yes. So it's an open meeting. There's certain people I've asked to be there that preach regularly in our church. Mm-hmm. So there's our student ministries pastor, our missional life pastor, our intentional community pastor. They preach pretty regularly. And so I use them in there. And then like our junior high pastor might come in once in a while. We have an intern who'll be in there pretty regularly. And then there'll be times where we might ask somebody specifically to come in. But I've told our staff, hey, whoever wants to, this is when we do it. You're welcome to come in and be a part of that.
Nice. And how long does that usually last?
We shoot for an hour, so we keep it pretty short.
Yeah, it is pretty short. Do you find that they're willing to give you good critique after you preach?
Yes. It was hard at first. I mean, I had to self-critique a lot at first to make them feel obviously more comfortable doing it.
Yeah. Okay. So you have that meeting on Monday, but then you said you sit down and devote Thursday to that process. So does anything happen between Monday and Thursday, or is it just rattling in your brain?
Both. So it's rattling in my brain. Some ideas might start coalescing. So I'll start still in that Evernote file. I'll start dumping some stuff in there. I'll start weeding through things, and I'll create a section in there where I'm maybe it develops different every time. So sometimes it's an outline that's developing. Sometimes there's just a really strong sentence or idea that's developing, and I just start working through that. And so throughout the week, I might be working on different sermons, you know, because you've got multiple ones working all the time. So it might be I'm bouncing around between different sermons, but something really strikes with that one, and I'll spend some more time on it.
So you're not really waiting till the week of to start forming an outline for a given sermon. It might already be happening. You might already be forming something a couple weeks out. It's not like this particular week you're really just focused on developing this one.
Right. Yeah. At my best, when I'm doing it well, which isn't always right, but when I'm doing it well, when I sit down to write the sermon, like I've got so much stuff that it really is more about weeding out and coalescing than it is about like trying to come up with it.
Yeah. So how do you find that you're able pretty well to, you know, because I think what's unique with you versus at least the first two interviews we've had is you're preaching on a more consistent basis. And so one of the things that, you know, both of Steve and JR before, you know, they typically only have a couple in mind that they need to be thinking about at a given time. It sounds like for you, you know, you might have 9 in mind in the next 3 months that you have to be thinking of. So do you find that you're able to hold at least conceptually all 9 of those in your head so that if you run across this while you're sitting at a stoplight, you see this bumper sticker, you can go, oh, that might work well in, you know, October 14th or whatever day.
Yeah, I don't hold it well in my head. And so that's why I like have to write everything down, and I know we're doing series. And so I'll see the bumper sticker and be like, I think that fits with that series, and I'll take a picture or write it down or whatever. But yeah, I don't hold things well in my head at all. If I don't write it down immediately, 90% of the time it's gone.
Sure. So when you talk about, as you know, I like to get really nerdy about this stuff. When you say write it down, I mean, are you mostly whipping out your iPhone and typing it into Evernote, or are you even scrawling on a sheet of paper?
I'm 90% of the time I'm using my iPhone. I don't use Evernote. I use Drafts.
Oh, Drafts.
So Drafts is fantastic.
Why don't you talk about Drafts a little bit? I think a lot of people could benefit from this one.
Yeah, I don't know a ton about Drafts, and I know I'm not using it to its full potential. But it's this great little app that I have it in my dock on my iPhone. I have it on my iPad, and you hit it, and a blank screen comes up. You type in a note. A lot of times I'm doing a voice note. I'll just do the voice note and it'll transcribe it for me. And then it goes away, and I will maybe once a week sit down and I'll go through all the notes that I've made that week. And I can hit a button and just send it to Evernote. I can hit a button and send it into OmniFocus that I use for task management. I can hit a button and it makes it a tweet. I use it on the weekends. This has been my newest thing. I use it on the weekends when people come up to me and share things going on in their life, or I'll make a random connection with somebody, and I'll pull out my iPhone after they leave, and I'll just write down, Keith lost his job this week.
Yeah.
And then what I do is I've made a little thing in Evernote where I have a running tally of people I talk to on the weekend, And then when I talk to somebody on the weekend, I hit a button and it sends it from drafts into that file of Evernote and can keep a track of what's going on with that.
Yeah. Great little tool. I use it very similar. So I know it's capable of a lot more, but even just to be able to not have to think about it and open it up and type something really fast, and you don't have to save it or anything. You just turn off your phone and it just tucks it away. It's great.
So good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So good.
Okay. Now I'm off on a nerdy tangent. I want to start talking about nerd, really, really nerdy stuff.
But... Well, you can go way nerdier than I can on this stuff. I know that.
So come Thursday, then, let's say, this is where you sit down and you're really, I imagine by Thursday afternoon, you want to have a somewhat finished product ready to go. I imagine the context of your church, I mean, from what I understand, your church is fairly large. So having, you know, spent time at a really large church, I know that that typically means by late Thursday, they're wanting outlines for slides and all that kind of stuff. They don't like you sending them to them at 8 a.m. on Sunday morning. So do you want to have it all wrapped up by late Thursday?
I want to have, at the very least on Thursday, I need to have an outline of something that's going to go in the bulletin. If there's going to be anything that's going to be on the screen, things like that, I need to have at the end of the day Thursday. Okay. Ideally, I have 75 to 80% of my sermon written at that point.
So would you say that your sermon prep process, I just want to like pick apart Thursday here in a minute, but would you say that your sermon prep process really is random thoughts that come to you on the fly, this Monday morning meeting, and then blocking out a day Thursday? Or are there other chunks of time that are really devoted to sermon prep throughout your week?
Yeah, I block out almost every morning.
Okay. Like the full morning?
The full morning.
Okay.
Most mornings, with the exception of every other week on Tuesdays, we do staff meetings. But with the exception of that, most mornings I don't take a meeting until lunch. And so I block out that time, and I'll use it. It gets used for a lot of stuff, but it'll get used for sermon prep. It'll get used for any kind of writing projects going on in the church. I'll read during that time. So I'll use it for that sort of stuff. It's just open time. And what I found is I don't do good with large concentrated periods of time on one task. Mm-hmm. So I can't sit down for 4 hours and work on one sermon. So I need to bounce around a lot. Sometimes I need to concentrate time. And so I'll be like, hey, I'll set the timer on my iPhone. Say I need to spend 30 minutes thinking about this. And I'll just force myself to sit down and work through, whether it's a part of a message or some other writing project, and do that. But yeah, just about every morning, Monday through Thursday, I've got this blocked out time.
I take it Friday's your day off.
Friday I take off.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. So do you find that's most of what you're doing in those mornings working towards a particular goal that's imminent, or is some of that even just, I just need to read this book because I know it might work into something in a sermon in 2 years or something like that?
Yeah, it's both.
Yeah.
It's both of those. And it goes back and forth. And so so I'll be reading stuff. And sometimes it might not have anything to do with any particular sermon. But it's like, hey, I know this is a good book, or this is something that's thought-provoking. Or I've never read Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. So I just started that this morning. And don't have a particular sermon or anything in mind, but I know it'll affect something at some point down the line.
So what kind of, I'll come back to that. Let's talk about Thursday. Let's keep working through this weekly schedule. We're going to come back to morning study time. So you sit down on Thursday knowing that today I need to have this sermon wrapped up, and you have just this Evernote file full of ideas, maybe something starting to come together. So why don't you walk through, is Thursday typically hold up in your office? Do you go out to a coffee shop and do that?
Yeah, I go back and forth.
Yeah.
So I have a home office, and I will a lot of times do a chunk of work there. Then sometimes I'll go into the office for a change of scenery, or I'll go to the coffee shop for the same things that JR and Steve mentioned, of just being around people, being in a different atmosphere, thinking about, like, it's hard to write sometimes in solitude for people that are going to hear it in an audience.
Yeah.
So I move around. I don't stay stuck somewhere for all day. And I'll sit down with that Evernote file and I'll read through it, and I will grab a hold of major ideas within that. And then I first make a Pages document using Apple Pages where I'll be dumping in scripture that I'll be using, whether it's one chunk of scripture or maybe from four or five different passages. I'll put that in there. If I'm going to use a bit of a more formal outline that the church will see, that it's like, hey, here's a few things that I want them to write down, or I want them to see this sort of linear progression in some way, I'll put that in that document. That's usually the first thing that I get done is that, and that sort of sets my progression for me.
So it's your overall structure, really.
Yeah, and it might just be one passage of scripture. Mm-hmm. That's all that goes on there. Depends on what structure I'm going to use that weekend. Then I will move from that into Mind Manager, which is a mind mapping software.
Okay.
And with that, what I'll begin doing is I'll begin sort of creating chunks of the message. And I'll say, hey, I'm going to talk about this idea here, and then I'm going to transition into this kind of idea. And they're two separate ideas, and I make them two different parts on the mind map. And then I'm going to walk through this passage of scripture, and it's going to be its own thing. So I'm going to hit on all the, and so it'll be its own piece within that. And then I'll just start building those out within the mind map.
Is this on a laptop or a iPad, tablet kind of thing?
I'm doing that on a laptop.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And I actually write out word for word within that, everything I say within the mind map.
Really?
I do.
So a manuscript within a mind map, pretty much.
A manuscript within a mind map. It's just crazy. It looks crazy. It doesn't make sense to anyone else, but it works for me.
Yeah.
And what that does for me is I am not a good extemporaneous speaker. Like when I start speaking, I say really, really stupid things. And I will say things that get me into trouble, or I repeat myself a ton if I'm just extemporaneously speaking. So writing everything out word for word helps me a lot with that. But then by doing it with the mind map, what it helps me with is I actually color code it within that for different transitional ideas, illustrations, scripture, all have different colors. That I want to say this thing word for word, that's got a color. So I'll color code it all. And what I can do with the mind map then is some of it, I can just see that initial idea and I don't need the rest. And some of it, I see that initial idea and I'm like, I need to make sure I'm saying this in the right way. And so I've got it all there in front of me when I go to preach it.
Does it work pretty well that you can click and unfold the sub points on that one? I'm not familiar with Mind Manager. I've used others, does it have it all right in front of you? And
yeah, it's all right in front of me. So I then export it as a PDF.
Oh, okay.
And I put it into Goodreader on the iPad.
So you put when you preach, you bring the iPad up.
So when I preach, I bring the iPad.
Yeah.
And I write justify the mind map when I go to preach it. So when I export it as a PDF, I write justify it. So it just makes this really long, continuous mind map rather than it being a circle. Mm-hmm. So then all I'm doing is I'm just scrolling down the page as opposed to trying to follow it around the circle.
I remember you sent me a picture of this once.
It doesn't make sense to anybody.
I'm going to ask you to send me a PDF too, so we can post it so people can see, and then they can either be transformed by the renewing of their mind by a new way to do their outline, or they can be completely confused. We'll see.
Yeah, probably completely confused.
So then as you're putting all of this together, you know, I don't finalize my teachings in a mind map, but I do use a mind map even as I'm pulling all those ideas together, because I love, and I do it on my iPad because I love to just be able to drag ideas. Oh, these match up. It's
right.
Amazing. Yeah. Okay. So then take us through the process on a Thursday of, you know, between collection of ideas to final product that you have at the end of the day, or roughly final product. We know it's never final, right?
Sure.
But what is, are there certain benchmarks, questions, structures, you know, that you're working through as you look at the text to make sure this is going to be a complete sermon, or questions you're asking yourself to make sure this is going to, you know, accomplish what you want it to accomplish?
Yeah, sure. So I'm asking, am I developing tension early on? So if there isn't some sort of tension early in the sermon, whether it's tension raised through the text, whether it's tension because of a story you tell, whether it's tension because of a question that you ask or life situations that you bring up, if I'm not raising tension early in the sermon, people don't want to listen. And so I'm making sure, okay, am I raising tension early in the sermon? And what I found actually for me is most of my sermons that fall flat really are because I didn't raise attention and I didn't resolve it.
But it's, so what's an example of that recently?
Oh, gosh. Well, I haven't preached in a month. So to think back on that.
You can't remember your sermons.
No. But this is the thing of preaching every week, right?
It's true.
Preaching on a regular basis. You move on to the next one. And
yeah,
you may have had a killer sermon the weekend before, but you can't linger in it. You've got a next Sunday's coming up. So I'm thinking about the sermon I'm going to preach when I get back preaching September 8th. So that weekend, it's kind of a vision message for the church. But the tension I'm going to develop is based off of the fact that, so we're a large church. Large churches, we have more large churches in America than we've ever had before. That it's growing at a crazy rate of how many large churches we have. And yet at the same time, the number of people following Jesus in America is in decline. The percentage of people that are being reached to the church is in decline. And so we've got these great churches like ours doing great things, and yet the kingdom of God is not expanding. And so there's a breakdown within that. So I think within that, I can set up some tension for my message of like, okay, what's going on here? What's going on with our church? What's going on with churches all around us that are these great churches? And yet the gospel is not expanding here. It's not exploding here.
So every time you preach, as you're in that prep process, like that's an intentional thing you're writing down or asking yourself, what is my tension going to be here?
Yeah, what's the tension that needs to be resolved?
Yeah, okay.
So what, I'm at, yeah.
What else do you try to work through on that as you build that outline?
Yeah, so I'm asking, what does this mean to people in my church? So I'm constantly trying to ask, what are people going through? How does this address brokenness? What does this say to, maybe I've met with a few people during the week and I'm thinking about their stories. And so I'm saying, what does this say to them? Why does this have any relevance for them? What do they care about this? I'm asking about, what does this say to the 80-year-old in our church who's been a Christian longer than I've been alive? And what does this say to the person who's here who's skeptical, who's just coming because their wife makes them come and they don't fully believe, but they like being around? I'm thinking about my atheist friend who comes to our church every weekend and how he might respond to it. And what does this mean for him? And so I'm thinking about particular people and about how it actually applies to them.
Yeah. And so you find that's helpful. Do you almost just take what you have and kind of work through this list and go, or do you more just look at it as a whole and say, what am I going to have to say to so-and-so this week and so-and-so?
Yeah, so I'll do it with particular people in my mind, and then I'll do it with particular categories of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll think we have a wide range of ages and ethnicities and all of that in our church. And so I think, what is this communicating to somebody who's single? What's it communicating to a 20-year-old college student? What's this communicating to, to empty nesters? And at times, what that will end up doing is it will end up that I'll say something and then I will rattle off five or six different things that I'll end up putting in my sermon that I'm trying to use to connect with different points and places where people are at.
Yeah. I heard, I was at a preaching conference once, actually at Rob Bell's church years ago, and Jeff Mannion was there and he called that grids. He talked about how you want to create a mental grid in your mind of the different people who would be there, and you want to make sure you're filling the grid. So
yeah.
Obviously it was a good metaphor because I can still picture the grid that he described, you know?
Yeah. So that's fantastic.
So you work through the tension, you work through, you know, what's this saying to particular people who might be there, other questions you're asking yourself or things you want to make sure you accomplish?
Well, I want to make sure I accomplish. So I want to make sure that I'm giving people something informative, that in some way that it's interesting, it's stimulating their mind in some way, it's thoughtful in some way. So I'm making sure it's that. I want it to emotionally connect with them as well. So I want it to intellectually connect with them. I want it to emotionally connect with them, that it stirs something within them. And what I find is it's really easy for me to land in either of those two places, and it's really hard for me to do both of those. So it's really easy to almost emotionally manipulate people with, whether it's stories and statistics and whatever, and to connect with at an emotional level. And it's really easy to just get nerdy and to kind of go through here's what's going on here, and here's the historical context of it, and here's what the Greek word means, and it's also used here, and it's really easy to just kind of stay on the information side. And I find like I've got to do both of those. So I'm asking, is it intellectually stimulating in some kind of way? Is it emotionally stimulating in some kind of way? And then I'm asking, am I spiritually connected with it? So that's the disciplines of like what JR talked about with prayer disciplines and of surrendering it to the Lord, trusting that he's the one who's moving and working in it, trusting that when it leaves my mouth, that I have no responsibility for it beyond that.
Yeah. And do you find that comes towards the end of Thursday just to sit with and say, do I feel connected with this? Or is that kind of a pulse you're taking all the way through?
No, it's usually after it's mostly written. And as I write, when I'm writing the actual message, I'm saying a lot of it out loud. So I process stuff out loud. So I will start on a point and I'll be typing it, and then I'll just stand up and I'll start walking around and I'll just start saying stuff, and some of it will grab a hold of, and I'm like, oh, I got to get this, and I'll sit down real fast and I'll type it out. And as I'm doing that sort of process, saying stuff out loud, I'm finding some of it's connecting with me emotionally. Some of it feel like is stimulating intellectually.
I'm picturing Robert Duvall and the Apostle pacing back and forth in his
totally.
Oh, God, you don't look like you don't look like Robert Duvall, but other than that, that's what I'm picturing now.
Yeah.
Why do you think it's a challenge to hold together as you prepare both an intellectual and an emotional connection? Like, why do you think once you start going one way, it's hard to bring the other in?
You veer off on that. You know, it's a good question. I find if I'm just left to my own devices, I tend to go the intellectual route rather than the emotional route. And it's harder for me to bring that in. And the further and further I go down that path, more and more I let go of that. And it's one of the critiques that I'll get when I bring my team together on Monday, is that they're like, yeah, it was all true and it was all right and it was good and you had good structure and good flow, but it just didn't resonate. Mm-hmm. Like there's something missing. It's like that intangible piece. And a lot of times it's that it didn't connect at an emotional sort of heart level.
Yeah,
I don't. I think that's just hard for me to get there in my wiring and makeup, I think.
It's easier. Do you feel like it's easier for you when you're going in an emotional direction to pull in the intellectual than the other way around? Probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I can see that because I'm the same way, not because I can see that in you cold hearted. So you've worked all that. You know, the one other piece I was going to ask, just even real particular, as you put together that structure, is do you almost have a framework outline that you try to fit it in terms of intro, text, explanation, application, or anything like that? Or do you find it's very different every time?
It's different every time. Well, I'll sometimes use a similar flow for a series. So for the Psalms series that we did, that we were talking about earlier, I would start by opening up sort of the context of the series. And then we for that series, whatever psalm we were going through, we read it aloud as a community. And so we would read it aloud. And then I would talk about that particular type of psalm. And then I would break down the psalm a bit and then try to make it personal. And so I followed that flow for that series. And so sometimes a series seems to have a natural flow to it, and I'll kind of lean into that. And sometimes it's just different every time. I find when you preach regularly, you less have to, you know, when you preach once in a while, your intro is so significant, right? That it's like you got to capture the audience. You have to get them to trust you and believe in you. You preach consistently and you already have that with them. So most of your audience already trusts you. They already, you don't have to win that over. And almost, I feel like if I do stuff like that week in, week out, it starts to feel like a circus show. So some weeks I'll try to have an intro that brings people in and that will grab people in some way. And a lot of times it's just, hey, we're going to turn here in the Bible and we're just going to start right there, because I've already got the trust established. So I don't need to do that.
Yeah, sure. How long do you typically preach?
Oh, They tell me 35 minutes, and it'll go to 45 sometimes. So 30 to 45.
They tell you, like, the people who plan your worship service tell you they're giving you 35 minutes?
Yeah, because, you know, you've got multiple services. You've got to get people out. You've got to get kids ministry, all that sort of stuff. So when I go over, it affects multiple places.
I'm well aware, okay. That's fantastic. So talk a little bit about this final then. You know, you take Friday off, which I'm sure that Friday, I like to take Friday off too, but you still find, you know, bits of your sermon are creeping into your mind. But what would you even say is your final seasoning of the sermon, you know, between late Thursday through, do you have Saturday night service or is it all Sunday?
We did until a week ago, just got rid of Saturday night.
Congratulations. So,
I can speak in the past tense for that.
Speak in the past then.
I get up early Saturday morning and try to finish my sermon in the morning. Sometimes I get it done before my kids are up, and then we'll kind of watch cartoons together or something Saturday morning. Sometimes it's not done, so I'll hang out with them for a little bit, and then I'll go hole up in my home office for another 2 hours or so to kind of wrap it up. And in that time, one of the things that I'm doing is I preach through my whole sermon at least once that morning, and I'm timing it. I'm timing it to make sure I'm within my time constraints, but I'm
45 minutes.
Yeah. And then I'm trying to see how transitions feel. I'm trying to see, that's where I'm doing some editing, and I'm not great at editing myself, but that's where I'm trying to do a little bit of editing. Like, oh, I feel like I'm going really long here and it's just getting convoluted and that's not helpful. I wanted to develop this point more and I feel like I'm kind of not going anywhere there. And so I'm trying to do a little bit of editing as I preach it out loud.
Yeah. And then, so then it's final pieces and then you bring your PDF into your iPad and you walk in there Sunday.
Well, I'll go in and then I'll preach it again. I'll get to church early, go in my office and have some time of prayer. And then I'll have some time where I preach it again and I'll time it again.
Yeah. I'll come back to this question I asked way at the beginning, but so you said there are some people who watch on a video screen within your church camp. So what do you find that you need to do? Even as I'm not even so much worried about the delivery because we're focused on prep.
Yeah.
But even as you prep, what do you need to have in mind as you're thinking through what's this going to be like for somebody who watches this down the hall on a screen?
Yeah. So, visual illustrations make a difference. There are things that visually might make more sense in person that don't communicate as well on a screen because of size or because of the context of it or whatever in some kind of way. So because of that, we limit some of those things at times. There are things, well, when we were doing Saturday night service, Saturday night was being recorded and used on Sunday morning. So you're just super careful about, you never say the word tonight. You never say, so you would always substitute today. You talk about this weekend. So make sure to put in language like that in there. You're trying to make sure that you're acknowledging the other rooms in some way. So as you're writing something, if you're saying, everyone in here, hey, if you've ever gotten a parking ticket, would you raise your hand? I'm writing down in there, hey, mention this venue and say, hey, those in Overdrive, if you've gotten a parking ticket, make sure you're raising your hand too. And if you're an Unplugged, you've got a parking ticket, raise your hand too. And so you're just writing in little things like that.
Yeah. What's the kind of an illustration that you've thought, oh, this would work live, but it's not going to translate well to the screen, some kind of visual?
Oh, gosh. Well, there are things like using a song to set up your sermon. We can't, or using a song in the midst of a sermon or something. That gets real limiting because it's like different bands could carry that out, or that song won't convey as well in a particular venue because of the kind of music that we do in there. I've had a few times where I'll say like, oh, I want us to do this worship song, so everyone's going to do this worship song after this message. Or going in and out of something, that to do a sermon and to have a break in the middle where something happens and then to go back in the sermon. What we found is to go away from the screen and to do something in the room and to go back to the screen is too much of a break in the venues. So I used to do more sermons where I did stuff in the midst of the sermon, whether it was a worship song or some performance song or something we did in the room, and we just don't do hardly any of that, if any, at all.
So then let's go back to the mornings that I said we'd come back to. I'm doing my best to keep some sense of structure and order, but my mind goes a million different directions with questions I want to ask.
Right.
So you know, go back to your Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday mornings, which aren't necessarily part of your sermon prep and your reading. Do you do any kind of collection of ideas and notes for those that then you can come back? And I was really surprised in the interviews we've done so far how much of their process is really just focused. It's ephemeral. You know, it's focused on this. I'm collecting ideas right now for this sermon, and there's not this catalog, so to speak, that I thought people might have. So I'm curious if in your morning times you're doing some kind of cataloging of quotes or ideas and what you do with those.
Yeah, so I am. So if I read something in a book that's interesting, I usually take a picture of it in Evernote, because Evernote does the OCR and I can search for it later. So I'm taking a picture of that quote in Evernote. If I'm doing personal study and something strikes me in the scriptures, I'll write it down real quick in drafts on my iPhone and kind of put that aside and re-engage. If I read an article on the internet, we are going to do Colossians next year, actually. And so I know next year after Easter, I think we're doing Colossians. And Rachel Held Evans did some blog posts recently on the household codes. And there's a section on household codes in Colossians. And so I didn't read through it all, but I read a little bit of it. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. And so I just clipped that into Evernote and threw it into Evernote. And then I've got my Colossians file that I'm building, and I can create a link to that specific note in Evernote in my Colossians file. And so I just drop a link in there, so that when I get to writing that series, that I've got, okay, here's some things that I've collected.
So all of this goes into Evernote.
Yeah. Evernote. All of that, everything goes into Evernote.
Yeah. Okay. So when you are doing your actual prep and study and all that, what are your go-to resources? Do you use Bible software, or do you have a library? I see bookshelves behind you. Do you have a library of books that you always find you want to go to? What are some of those?
Yeah, I go back and forth. So I, for like the Psalm series, I was going to be traveling a bit in the midst of needing to prep that series. So I used Logos for all of my prep for that and downloaded the commentaries that I wanted on the Psalms in there. I would like to use Logos a lot more. The problem is I have a lot of money invested in physical reference books, and it's hard to start making that switch over. It's fantastic. And I'll use, like you and Steve, I use Dr. McReynolds' Interlinear. I use that all the time. I'll also use, like JR, the IVP Bible Background Commentary.
Yeah.
I'm constantly using that. For a particular series, it depends on what we're going through. So for Colossians, for instance, I went to Scott McKnight's blog, and he has suggestions for, I think, just about every New Testament book on commentaries to get. So I just went looked up his suggested Colossians commentaries and then looked them up on Amazon and ended up buying like three or four of the ones that he had suggested.
I didn't even know he did that. That's great.
Yeah,
I'll ask you to send me a link I can include.
I'll try and find that.
Okay. And so when you buy those, you just buy physical copies, or do you look first in Logos or Kindle?
Yeah, I'll look first in Logos. I don't like using Kindle for any kind of reference books, kind of a pain.
Yeah.
So I'll look in Logos, see what it costs. The nice thing of having a physical copy that I haven't been able to duplicate with digital copies is I can pass it around. So my office at church, I just tell our staff, like, this is a library for you. So come in and use books and stuff when you want. And so whenever I have it digital, it's harder to share.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's one of my bigger reasons for using that stuff. But it's a pain to be like, oh, I got to cart this book back and forth. And sometimes it'll be at my house. Sometimes it'll be at the office.
Yeah. Okay. So other than individual commentaries on a per book basis, you spend some time with McReynolds and the IVP Background. I'll link to these on the website. Are there others that you just have to go to each time?
No.
Are those your two key?
No, I don't feel like there's anything I ever have to go to. There might be books that I've read on a subject that I'll pull those four or five books out for something. Yeah, but there's never like, there's very few that it's like I'm constantly going back to this particular reference book.
Any books that you think have just been really helpful for how you think about preaching and the process?
Yeah, so I wrote some down because Stephen J.R. stole a bunch of mine.
You can mention those too. It's okay to mention them again.
War of Art, I think, is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I reread that at least once a year. Bird by Bird is another one that's so hugely helpful for me. When she talks about the law of the, she uses a better word for it, but love the crummy first draft.
She does use a different word.
Yeah. But that was so freeing for me. Such a huge, like, oh, just write and just write and just get it down. And it doesn't have to be good. And it doesn't have to be the final product. And that was such a big deal. But Made to Stick by the Heath Brothers.
Yeah.
That's been really helpful about like what makes a message sticky. And I went through a period of time where I just wrote down, here are the things that make a message sticky, and just forced myself to have those things. And I think what happens is this is why I don't have as much of a set structure, because you have a set structure for a period of time and then it becomes a part of your routine and you don't have to constantly go back to it. Right. And so I'll adopt people's structure for a period of time. So I took Andy Stanley's outline. It's me, we, God, you, we, his sort of structure. And for a period of time, I wrote for like 6 months, I wrote sermons trying to fit it into that structure. And then out of that, I was able to emerge some of my stuff that made sense to me. And I don't have to go back to that. And did the same thing with the Heath Brothers, with here are the things that make something sticky. And I had those down as like this checklist. I'm going to make sure I have these things in a sermon. And then it just starts to get ingrained.
Yeah.
So that's been big. Manage Your Day to Day is a book that I read recently that a bunch of creatives wrote. That was super helpful for me.
I might have cost you money on that one. I blogged about it.
You may have been the one that forced me to buy
it. It's cheap.
No, it's a cheap book. I actually bought it for everyone on our staff who is in any kind of ministry role.
Good.
It's a quick read, right? And it just gives some really helpful tips in there. Really practical in a lot of ways. You mentioned Rob Bell's preaching conference. The videos from that I go back to probably every year, the Poets, Prophets, and Preachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I just rewatch those. He just has some great structure, some great little tidbits in there that are really helpful.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Well, the question that I like to, as we start wrapping up, question I like to ask is, what have I not asked about that you think you could say that might be helpful as people are forming and changing and evaluating their own sermon prep?
Yeah. So, well, I wrote down a few things expecting that. So,
dang it. See, now people know kind of what to expect.
That's true. Because
this isn't new anymore.
Well, I'm not good extemporaneous, so I would just be totally unhelpful. What I found, whenever we can pair something tangible with a sermon, it's hugely helpful. So we try to do that as a part of our sermon prep process, whether it's with a whole series or whether it's with a particular sermon. So with the Psalm series, we created a bookmark for people to pray through the Psalms as we did that series, gave them some instructions on how to pray through the Psalms on one side of the bookmark. On the back side, it was pray this Psalm on this day, this Psalm on this day, created a resource like that. We did, when we did the series on Sermon on the Mount, we challenged the church to read through the Sermon on the Mount every 2 weeks. So over the course of the summer, as we went through the Sermon on the Mount, they'll have read it 12 times. We will did a whole message on baptism and invited people to spontaneously decide to get baptized that day. Mm-hmm. We'll do stuff where we did a thing on grieving recently and interviewed a guy on grieving. And then we had trees outside where people took leaves that we had given them, where they wrote down somebody they had lost, whether it was through death or through a relational loss, and they put those names up there. And it's kind of this act of solidarity. For some people, it's the first time they'd acknowledge like that was a loss, and really powerful.
Yeah.
So anytime we can put something tangible with it, it just really is super helpful with it.
Sure.
I find writing in community, having the community around me to write, has just been huge. When I try to write a sermon without that Monday meeting, when whatever's happening, travel schedules or whatever, can't do it, it's harder for me to write a sermon.
Even that half hour, here's what's coming this week, just really kickstarts stuff.
It totally kickstarts stuff. It gives a different perspective. They'll often give me things I wouldn't have thought of. There are things that I say, phrases I'll use in my sermon every weekend that aren't mine, that I'm stealing from something somebody said in that room. Mm-hmm. And that, especially preaching every week, that's just made things huge. And I'm really into trying stuff. So Steve, I met with Steve a couple years ago when he moved back to Southern California and talked to him about his sermon process. And he told me about his note cards. And I was like, I'm going to ditch the digital stuff for a while. And I'm just going to do his note card deal. And so for maybe a month, I wrote every sermon that way. And it's just hopeful to engage in a new way. And I'm totally all about throwing myself into something new and just giving it a go. And I might adopt it, and it might stretch me in a new way and cause me to think differently. And so, yeah, I don't use note cards, but that was really helpful.
Well, see, that's why I had to ask you, because I've had these guys who do analog stuff. I needed somebody to talk digital with me, which is what I told you in the email.
Yeah, right.
All right. Well, any others that you wrote down ahead of time because you didn't want to be extemporaneous?
Oh, gosh. Let me see. What else do I got here? This is something I'm thinking through. I didn't think about this, but I'm trying to vary my illustrations. So I'm asking, have I used a lot of sports illustrations lately? Have I talked about my kids too much? Have I, you know, what's going on that's relevant that people would have watched this week? So I'm trying to, this is one of the questions I'm asking, are these illustrations, am I getting just kind of rote in my illustrations? They knew.
I can testify that when I listened to your sermon, you talked about the guy who walked across the Grand Canyon. Tightrope across the Grand Canyon. So there you go. You did it.
And then I'm just listening to, I'm taking in a lot of information and categorizing some of it and some of it just taking in. And it might not directly affect your sermon. It might not be like, oh, this is an illustration, but it's all synthesizing in you in some way. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I listen to the Moth podcast every single week.
Yeah.
So fantastic. And I don't think I've ever used an illustration from that, but what it's done for me is it helps me to see, like, here's real stories, real people. Here's what, like, there is actually happening in them. It's helping me to think about my storytelling and how I tell stories. So I listen to that every single week. I'm reading, you know, there's certain things I read every week. I read the New York Times just about every day. I'm reading our local paper every day, listening to sports radio because we're in a town that, right by us, Lakewood was voted Sports Town USA by Sports Illustrated magazine. So if I'm not knowing what's going on in general with sports stuff, like, I'm just out of the loop.
Do you get excited about sports naturally, or is that something you've had to take on?
I get excited about the Dodgers.
Okay.
I could care less about college football. Like, I don't understand college football. I enjoy professional football, but don't understand obsession with college football. But if I'm not listening to it, I'm just out of the loop with people.
Yeah, yeah.
And it might not be an illustration. It just might be like that just becomes a part of who you are and be an incarnation of where you're at, right?
Yeah. Well, Mike, this has been great. I'll even say, do you have any other, because these have been good too, anything else that you jotted down? I don't want to cut you off on those.
Oh, gosh. No. Oh, here's one more thing.
One more. Okay.
One more. This is it.
Is this an iPod? Steve Jobs, one more thing going on here.
This is, no, well, it's not that good. But this is one of my hacks for when I'm stuck. I do so much on my computer, but when I'm stuck, I break off the computer and I whiteboard stuff. I get out notebook and I write it in my notebook. So I'll go through times where I write my whole sermon out on some sort of notepad or something, just because it forces my brain to engage differently.
Yeah, that's helpful. I carry a field notes and I hate handwriting. I carry a field notes and just force myself every day just to write down, here's the meetings I have today. Here's the texts I read today or whatever. Just so I have one thing that I do every day where I'm handwriting something.
That's good.
Yeah. And it's cool at the end of the year to have a stack of beat up field notes and say, hey, here's 2012. So,
yeah.
Well, if someone wants to keep up with what you're up to, why don't you tell us about church website, your personal website, Twitter, and the like.
Sure. Church website is parkcrest.org. And then my blog, which is completely inactive, is mikegoldsworthy.com. And Twitter, I'm Mike Goldsworthy.
Mike Goldsworthy, not I'm Mike Goldsworthy.
Just Mike Goldsworthy. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks so much. It's been great to have you. I like I said, from only exchanging a few emails and tweets and blog comments, I knew that this would be an enjoyable discussion, and it's nice to actually meet you in kind of person.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm so glad you're doing this. It's really helpful. I've passed it on to everyone on our team who preaches, and I'm excited for hosts you're going to have on. Nobody talks about this stuff.
Right?
I mean,
I ask people about this all the time, and it always leads to great conversations. So I thought, well, let's just record them.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm glad you're doing it.
Well, thanks a lot. Good to talk with you.
All right. Well, I thought that was a great interview. Again, Mike brought just a unique perspective. I think I said so in the conversation, but I was pretty excited to have Mike on because I knew he gets a little more digital than our previous two guests like to get all analog and handwritten. And I get pretty nerdy and digital with my own processes. So I was excited to hear how Mike would incorporate some of those. But one of the things Mike did email me about briefly after we chatted was he sent me a message prep template that he has used in the past. He's not currently using it. I think that's why it wasn't fresh on his mind. But anytime he was preparing a message, he would work through this, and it would have some important questions that he would want to ask about a text, and just really help him look at the framework of a sermon as it was coming together to make sure it incorporated some key elements. So there's a PDF of that, as well as some of the other documents he mentioned, available on the website, again, at sermonsmith.com. Thanks again for listening, and you can, like I said at the beginning, you can find us on Twitter, on Facebook, and if you're willing to leave us a review on iTunes, that would be fantastic. Thanks so much.